This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
Behind the Reins. The story of the D.B. Clydesdales and a Kiwi family by Nick van der Sand. Adapted for radio on Free FM 89.0 in the series Historic Souvenirs. Broadcast by Free FM 89.0. Proudly supported by New Zealand On Air.
Jill entered my life, accompanied by ex-steeplechaser Tawa Mahal, known to us as Joe. She came accompanied by a boyfriend when she brought him up, but he very conveniently, or decently, offered to go and visit relatives in the area, and we two went off riding. That was the start of something special. Before long, Jill was coming up weekly when she finished work as a dental nurse in Auckland on Friday evenings and would catch up with me in the milking shed usually. She took to farm life like a duck to water, loved it, and would walk with me in the morning out to get the cows, and before returning for the normal cooked breakfast that my mum would have ready after milking. Between milkings, we would head off with our horses and just have a wonderful time. Now, when the hunt season came around, we would load up the horses in my old truck and head off for a day's hunting with hounds. And that is pretty much how our courtship went. I was tied to the cows, of course, and Jill worked in Auckland. I proposed to Jill, things had moved on pretty much by now, of course, and I proposed to Jill on the last day of the August school holidays, the night before she was due back in Auckland. It was not a very romantic proposal, as I was quite a shy country boy. But Jill accepted, and we were married the following January in her parents' lovely garden in Glenfield, surrounded by friends and family. After a quick honeymoon, we were keen to get settled into our lives together, and we're renting a lovely but run-down historic cottage on a farm near my parents' property. Jill and I had been offered this for as long as we wanted, if we were happy to help restore it to its former state. It was historic, and it was also in the interest of the Historic Places Trust. Shortly after we married, though, my parents sold the farm, and we moved to Pokoroa Station near Taupo, where I got a job as a shepherd. I really enjoyed working with my horses and dogs. I was learning new skills every day, and it was a nice change from milking cows. I finally completed my New Zealand certificate in farm management while there, which I had embarked on while still single. I had always dreamed of owning my own farm, and Jill and I were both determined to do so. And with the help of the rural bank, we moved north again to Aotearoa to milk cows. Unfortunately, I caught a severe case of leptospirosis in our second spring, sending me to hospital. So Jill had to leave dental nursing to run the farm while I recovered. Luckily, we had made good friends with new neighbours, Robert and Marjorie Smith, who became lifelong friends. Robert helped Jill when he could, until he also succumbed to that illness a week later. And then I found myself out of hospital milking his cows. Doctors advised I might have recurrences for several years. So we decided to sell and have a lifestyle change. we purchased 300 acres in the Kaipara Hills. No house, no power, just a small one stand wool shed and a small round hay barn. But we loved it. We hired an old caravan, a leaky old caravan, I might say, put our furniture in the wool shed and moved in. Apart from sheep, cattle and our small horse breed operation, I took on horse logging with my good friend Bill Burke, who also had Clyde sales, including a full brother to my stallion, Woodside Captain. We first paid a visit to the only other horse logging team who were working in Cowrail, Jeff Cornelius and Dave Saunders, and they were very helpful to us. We were able to see just how they operated, and we also made patterns of their logging harness, a type of spider harness. We went home and made our own from old fire hose. Another big bonus was receiving instructions in chainsaw operation, tree felling, sharpening and maintenance. They had a contract with New Zealand Forest Products in the Rodney Forest. Following a trial period, we were given a contract with Forest Products, and to be viable, we had a production target of 21 tonnes per day per man, which we found was realistic. We worked in the Maharangi Forest. Some of them had been taken over from private concerns, and some had missed out on some of their silviculture, so in other words, pruning and thinning, etc. So that not having been done, we set to work thinning the trees. They would come and mark the trees to get down to a certain stocking rate, and we would come fell, limb and haul the logs out to areas called skids to be processed into poles for horticulture, building or fence posts. I had four horses to use, one being my stallion, who was always quite keen and sometimes a little too fast to be working efficiently, as we needed steady horses on very good voice control. I had a close shave one day when pulling a heavy log onto the skid. I asked my stallion captain to back up a couple of steps to slacken off the snig chain, which he did. However, just as I was undoing the chain from the log, and had my hand under the chain, he decided to jump forward, crushing my hand between the two. Luckily, after a couple of strong commands, he stopped and backed up again. It was painful. Another good horse was a mare called Jenny. She was a black three-quarter Clydesdale, borrowed from a friend. And there was my young mare called Princess, who was really excellent. The best of all had to be my little gelding called Tinker. He was a purebred Clydesdale who never grew past 15 hands, but he was perfect in the bush. Steady and reliable, I could leave him to go to the skids on his own with a log. Bill and I would each take two horses into the forest early in the morning and usually spend some time felling and limbing the trees that had been marked for harvesting. Bill's horses became very good and worked well for him. We both carried two short 2-metre snig chains on each horse and would snig out one or two logs depending on the size of the log, usually working with one horse each, but occasionally two. We could then pull four logs at a time. Following a lunch break, we would harness up the horses and snig logs out to the skid. The skids would be positioned near a road that had been bulldozed off just prior to our starting work, so it was accessible to logging trucks. We also measured the logs and cut them to suit their end uses. I loved the forest work. It was extremely physical and we became very fit. I really enjoyed spending most of the day working alongside my horses and, when the chainsaws were quiet, enjoying the birdsong and the rustle of wind through the treetops, and at times, the sound of the log crashing through and over the slash. That is the cut-off limbs. Eventually, there was a downturn in farming, and posts for fencing were not in high demand. So sales declined. The company put us to thinning to waste and pruning. Forest Bride did not want to lose Bill and I. They valued our sustainable work in the Maharangi Forest, so we carried on for several months. At the same time, I continued with my own farm duties, which included a large-scale calf-rearing operation. One night, out of the blue, We had a call from our friend Heath Harris, who presented me with the opportunity of working with horses and bulls on film sets in Australia. So before long, Jill, our youngest Samantha, and I were heading across the Tasman for several months of exciting animal wrangling work. However, when we returned to New Zealand, Jill and I threw ourselves into our exciting new role, training and working the new Clydesdale team for DB Breweries. We had finally landed our dream job. Life had certainly taken a turn for the better, and we were thriving in our new challenge. Many years later, our three wonderful children, all heavily involved with horses, the girls Samantha and Louise, compete extensively, and our son Ben is a well-respected farrier in Cambridge. All three are happily married and starting families, fortunately living close to us. In April 1986, after working solidly for 7 months, 7 days a week, training the horses, we had our first trip with the newly built transporter and the first time using the new show harness. Lots of firsts on this day. The purpose of our trip was to give a conference full of DB Brewery sales personnel a preview of their latest and greatest advertising and promotional tool, the DB Clydesdale. At this stage, none of the sales employees had any idea of the existence of the treasure that a small group of us had been preparing and keeping under wraps as much as possible. The sales conference was being held in a big hotel motor inn complex with expansive grounds and much shrubbery on Fenton Street in Rotorua. I was able to drive the team onto the grounds and keep them concealed while all the conference delegates were called out to morning tea on the lawn. Once they were all out, chatting and oblivious to our presence, I drove the Clydesdale team out from cover and across the lawn, pulling up beside them. Their reaction was one of absolute astonishment, and the vibe palpable. They were blown away. The team's great unveiling to the company was my first taste of PR, public relations. Although we were all quite nervous beforehand, the exercise went off very well and was an excellent rehearsal for our first public appearance. Jill was helping to prepare the horses along with our groom, Judy, who had been involved with the early training and preparation of the team. We were gaining experience in developing valuable time management skills, often under pressure. Judy continued to travel with us for several of our early trips. The team was now officially the DB Clydesdales. They were a corporate entity, but sometime later were rebranded and relaunched as the DB Draft Clydesdale. As such, they were directly promoting the Clydesdale horse, honest, hardworking, and dignified. I was pleased with the horses, pleased with the staff, and pleased with the audience response. It had turned out to be a good day, and we felt very happy. When I was first given the job of working with and driving the DB Clydesdale team, I encountered a big dose of good old Kiwi tall poppy syndrome, even from people with whom I had had many years acquaintance. This was disappointing and distressing and persisted or even worsened when I became the team manager. It continued to raise its ugly head from time to time for the whole 14 years I worked with the DB team. It was funny, though, that the pettiness magically disappeared when I no longer managed the team. I know it all boiled down to jealousy. Of course, people would be envious. It was, after all, a dream job for many, and I have always felt extremely grateful to have held it. But it was a position that required many qualities, and I had worked hard, very hard, to make it happen. Certainly, there were other people who may have had some of those qualities. But to be honest, I can't think of anyone in New Zealand, certainly not at the time, who would have had them all rolled into one. I think I was pretty much born for the job. So, what are those qualities? First and foremost, The team manager must be a first-class, all-round horseman, able to start, train, and school the horses to a world-class standard. An in-depth knowledge of feeding and nutrition is required. Then he must be more than proficient at driving 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, and even 8 in hand in high-pressure, challenging situations. Prime task of the DB Clydesdales was one of advertising, promotion, and public relations. The teamster must be a people person, personable, and who generally enjoys engaging with people. He must be comfortable speaking to a crowd and comfortable in front of a camera or a radio microphone. Here is where I made a big discovery. I was a farm boy and a forest logger who was used to much solitude and working in the backcountry and forests of Northland, and who had always thought he preferred the company of animals or perhaps other farmers and horsemen. I was in for a shock. But guess what? After the initial prize, I found I enjoyed talking to people from all walks of life. I found their lives and their stories interesting. And of course, when I was speaking of what I loved. Public speaking was an important part of the job. I'm pleased to say I like people very much. The company did send me on a couple of media courses where you are tutored on how to present yourself on camera. I found this fun, and the tutor said I came across well because I was always just myself. I never felt I had to project any kind of image. Apart from talking to a lot of people from the public and the media when on the job with the horses, I would often be whisked away to do radio station interviews. Sure, there were some initial nerves, but these soon would disappear as I warmed into my subject. Often, I had to be reminded not to talk for too long. I often had butterflies before a big performance at the reins of the team too. But once I got into it, I came right. Early in our employment, it was made very clear to us that all staff working with the DB Clydesdale team had to present a clean-cut, healthy, sporty appearance. The company did not want anyone on the team to look like a boozer. No beer guts. When we were carrying out the team handling displays, Jill would do a commentary explaining who was who among the horses and the people and what was happening and how it happened. She had a good speaking voice and elocution and would explain the practical application or origin of the various manoeuvres included in our display, like the docking manoeuvre, required of teamsters when they back a wagon into a loading dock and then have to swing their team sideways out of the path of passing traffic. I also had to be at ease and to project confidence and competence when meeting, as I often did, with senior management from Heineken and Asia Pacific Breweries, who by this time owned DB. We were ambassadors for DB Brewery Limited, one of the country's biggest corporate businesses. In short, the overall appearance of the operation must simply be world-class, and it was. Jill and I were sent overseas on at least two occasions to compare notes and learn from Clydesdale brewery teams such as Budweiser in America, Heineken in Amsterdam, Holland, Carlton United in Australia, Young's Breweries in London, and Wadworth Brewery in Devizes, England. We also met with other companies and private teams in America, Britain, Holland, Germany, Poland, and Australia. A good work ethic was essential, and the unquestioning willingness to go the extra mile. We were always thinking of ways to improve. Lambert Ormsby is one of the men who taught me so much when I was younger. Mr. Lambert Ormsby of Welcome Bay, Tauranga, was one of nature's true gentlemen. A quietly spoken man of slight build, he was quite possibly my greatest teacher. Lambert did not talk a lot. He showed his ability by doing horsework, even in his 80s. He had worked horses all his life, having, as a young man, been a teamster on the roads of West Auckland. He later drove the only horse team in building of the road over the Kaimai Ranges. I once attended a Western Bays Harness Club field day at the steep Ormsby property at Welcome Bay, where Lambert demonstrated how to put a road around a steep hillside using horses, first using a plough and an earth scoop alternately, and finally a horse-drawn grader. Lambert ploughed with four horses and a two-furrow plough. He also demonstrated top dressing on hills with a horse-drawn top dresser spreading fertilizer. He used his own horses that were quite spirited Clydesdale crosses, broken in by himself. On another occasion, I saw him win the horse ploughing section at the New Zealand Ploughing Championships, Mobile Silver Plough, at Horatiu, Hamilton. He had driven that team with the plough in the wagon all the way from Tauranga and then all the way home again after the match. He slept under the wagon at night, and all this by a man of such advanced years. In the time when I was training and preparing the initial team for DB, Lambert came over to Karaka, Papakura, and stayed with us for a few days. He would come out with me each day, working the horses. He did not tell me what to do, but just observed, and every now and then would suggest making a slight change here, an adjustment there, or perhaps change a horse's position in the team. Little things that can make a big difference, and Lambert's suggestions always did. He also showed me a variation in my rein handling. That also helped a lot. I owe a lot to Lambert. I have learnt my horsemanship from several people during my life, one or two in particular. Such people are generally quietly spoken and do not rush to imbue one with their apparent knowledge. These are the true horsemen. In contrast are those who constantly open their mouth to tell you how you should be doing it or what you are doing wrong. These people are much less likely to be able to do it themselves, but remain critics on the sidelines. Indeed, Lambert did express frustration at times over people he could have helped so much if only they had been willing to listen. He is gone now, but I shall never forget him or what he taught me. He was most complimentary about how I had the horses going, which was a nice antidote to some of the criticism I had received from some other quarters.
When Samantha was about 11 months old and becoming very familiar with car-bearing duties and being carried around on our back, we received a phone call from a good friend, Heath Harris, in North Sydney. Heath was an horse trainer and had worked with animals on many international films. This included transporting to New Zealand for filming Tara Inferno, the star thoroughbred horse used on the Farlap movie. Nick had worked with Heath on several occasions, including Marlboro Cigarette advertisements and also the movie High Country, filmed around Mirawai, north of Auckland. Heath's call was like a ray of sunshine in a dark time for us. He told us that he was about to start work on a new Australian movie called Bullseye. This involved breaking and training carriage horses and bulls for the movie. Heath explained that he had been let down by someone else and wondered if Nick would like to go over to work as a wrangler and a horse trainer. Heath's phone call, as it turned out, was a major turning point in our lives at a time when things couldn't get much worse. His offer of work in Australia really was attractive. After a quick discussion, Nick and I agreed that a change of direction was the right thing to do. As we had no current car-faring contract, we made arrangements to sell up the farm and head to Australia. Nick left within a fortnight. Meanwhile, I stayed home at the farm to sell the remaining cows and calves and put our furniture into storage before taking our dog and cats to my parents' place and flying out to Sydney with Samantha about a month later. Production had started by the time I arrived. Samantha and I flew to Bourke in a tiny plane and were collected by the nanny of one of the other families working on set. Nick was away filming at that time on a location at Salt Lake with over 500 cows, bulls, 25 horses. Living conditions were far from flash. We lived in a tiny old caravan in the wool shed with the rest of the crew and showered in a communal outdoor shower with water heated by what was referred to as a donkey. 44-gallon drum with a fire underneath kept burning night and day. Everywhere was sand, prickly, thorny bushes, snakes. not the safest place for a child who could not yet even walk. We were based at that location for about 2 months, and despite my initial hesitations, I grew to love my experience there. There were three slightly older children living on location who would sometimes wheels, mats, was pushed her around and entertain her in the wool shed. We became part of a wonderful family community there with the crew. Samantha was very well looked after by everyone. Some of our best memories were made in Bourke, and it was here that we met some wonderful people on that remote, dusty location. Nick met a young German tourist and writer, a man called Klaus Arp, who was backpacking through the Australian outback. We have remained very close friends with Klaus. It is he who has been a key inspiration for writing this book. We have also remained friends with the others we met on set, including Maggie Roberts-Duffy, one of the Australian horse wranglers, and Yvette Bodium, who now lives near us in Cambridge, New Zealand. After filming had been completed in Bourke, we relocated to a place called Pete's Ridge near Gosford, New South Wales. Nick and I stayed on a little or longer to help sort gear, disperse vehicles, wagons, stagecoaches and horses to their owners. At last we had some clean green grass for Samantha to play on. One day while we were at Pete's Ridge in October 1985, we had a phone call from a good friend, Sheila Coltman, who lived in New Zealand. Sheila told us she had just read an article in the New Zealand Herald that DB were putting together a six-horse Clydesdale team and were about to look for horsemen and staff to run the operation. We immediately contacted Kim Clotworthy in Auckland, who was a racehorse trainer who had initially been given the job of managing the Clydesdale operation and locating suitable horses. Kim told us that the positions were indeed available and that he would organise an interview with breweries when we had returned from Australia. Before leaving Australia, we organised a brief meeting with the famous Carlton United Brewery and their lovely Clydesdales. Nick and I knew very well that this meeting would be very helpful, picking up tips and advice around brewery team management ahead of our much-anticipated interview with DB. After arriving back in Auckland, reuniting with our pets and animals, an interview was arranged at the DB Brewery in Otahuhu. We obviously made a good impression on them, and by the time we left, the dream job was ours. We couldn't quite believe it.
Tune in next week to find out what happens to the Van der Sand family. It'll be another edition of Historic Souvenirs from the book Behind the Reins by Nick Van der Sand. This is broadcast on Free FM 89.0, proudly supported by New Zealand On Air.
For more episodes, use the accessmedia.nz app for iOS and Android devices, or subscribe to this podcast via Spotify, iHeartRadio, or Apple Podcasts. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.